You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Anthas Gaklia, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustail.
Turn your radio to the CITR 101.9 FM on a Tuesday, specifically at 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. for saxophone Hella Primiti or saxophone Lenui. Hosted by moi, accompanied with the improvisationalists, saxophonists, composers, and musicians of our great era since the 70s. Featuring artists such as Anthony Braxton, Albert Bailey, Solange, Ghostface Killer, Warner Queen, Sonny Ryan. That's 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. on a Tuesday to listen to saxophone a la Primiti or saxophone Lenui.
Knock, knock. Guess who? MRG Live coming right back at you. This time with a whole new list of upcoming live shows by your favorite artists. Hear this. Marika Hackman, Faye Webster, Empress of, Peter Cat Recording Co., and The Rare Occasions are a few of the artists MRG Live is bringing to you. Follow at MRG Live Official on Instagram to stay tuned with all the artists performing near you. Hastings Crossing is Vancouver's eclectic heart, a welcoming, diverse community rooted in social innovation, compassion, and cultural wisdom. Situated downtown along Hastings between Richards and Gore, you will find some of Vancouver's OG businesses like Nemesis Coffee, Meat and Bread, Dressu, Nuba, and many more. By supporting local businesses and social enterprises in Hastings Crossing, you are also helping to shape a more resilient, inclusive, and sustainable local economy in the downtown east side. Find out more about how Hastings Crossing Business Improvement Association is working to support the people and economies of Vancouver's downtown east side at hxbia.com or follow us on Instagram at hxbia.
In the context of Vancouver's opioid crisis, CITR would like to take a moment to share some harm reduction strategies.
Try not to do drugs alone. When going out, let friends know what drugs you're taking and make sure someone has an naloxone kit. If you're able to, get your drugs tested before taking them.
Avoid mixing opioids with alcohol or stimulants. Remember that opioids can include painkillers prescribed by a doctor, and it's possible for any drugs to be contaminated with opioids.
Learn the signs of opioid overdose, which include, but are not limited to, unresponsiveness or unconsciousness, inability to speak, breathing that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, heartbeat that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, skin tone that has turned blue or gray, choking or gurgling sounds.
If you think someone is overdosing, call 911 immediately. Start rescue breathing and administer naloxone if you have it. You cannot get in trouble for being on drugs, so always call 911 in an emergency.
For more information about naloxone kits and training, visit towardtheheart.com.
Thank you and stay safe.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. I hope everyone is having a wonderful start of the week. The weather was quite rainy, quite wet for the past couple days. Yesterday, I'd say, was the day we saw most of the rain. But when I woke up this morning, it was actually very sunny, but there's still a bit of wind, so I think we still need a jacket or a hoodie to warm us up. But yeah, I hope you guys are ready for another great interview. I have had the opportunity to connect with a reporter. So without further ado, if you can hear me, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, for sure, Jeff. Hi, this is Pratyush Dayal. I'm a multimedia journalist with CBC News Saskatchewan. And thank you for this opportunity, Jeff.
Awesome. Thank you again for taking this opportunity. I am really excited to do this interview with you, and I hope you are as well.
Oh, I am 100%, yeah.
All right. First, I want to ask you why this particular career in journalism, and specifically as a reporter?
Well, personally for me, Jeff, like growing up in India, I always found writing as a form of great expression for me. And when time came, you know, when I was completing my grade 12, I was like, oh, you do something with this writing. And the immediate thought was journalism. And back home, a lot of great investigative stories throughout my childhood, you know, propelled me to pursue this path. And here I am. And I wanted to, you know, grow myself as a reporter, because you get that opportunity to, you know, speak with people, get their stories, understand their life experiences, and then, you know, imbibe it all and communicate that to a larger audience. So I think it's a very challenging job, but again, it's so fulfilling. And I think that's why, you know, I thought like, you know, becoming a reporter would be just the right fit for me.
That's amazing. I mean, being a reporter sounds really, really fun to do, but also I think there's a lot of work that goes into it. But I think the two things that are important is, like you said, writing and speaking. And your initial interest in writing, you know, makes a total connection to this job. But was there anything that you did to help with your speaking ability or your communication skills while you were in either high school or undergrad?
Well, I mean, not particularly during undergrad or high school. I mean, I used to participate in debate activities and, you know, oratory schools and such, but there was no per se, you know, skills that I could hone during that time. I was just a kid trying to figure out what to do. But, you know, on that note, though, it's very interesting being a racialized journalist. Because you often, however hard you may try, you always, you know, looked at with a certain amount of gaze. And that gaze revolves around, you know, the way you speak, the way you enunciate your words, the way you sound. And, I mean, one thing, you know, an instructor told me during my undergrad was that, you know, always speak in the way you feel comfortable in. And that really helped. And the only thing, you know, which really propels you and which makes you feel more comfortable in your own language and body is doing it more. So I think instead of any school, any sort of, you know, programs I pursued, I think it was more of just practice that I did, Jeff, that, you know, was helpful for me to work on my speech. I don't know if I'm still perfect there yet, but it's a journey, I guess, ongoing as it is.
So journalism, there are a lot of areas and topics you can cover. Was there a particular reason why you are covering topics such as climate change, race and gender, and immigration that appealed to you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like in Canada, like, you know, we all know like Canada is such a multicultural space and it's constantly evolving. Often at least in my experience, you know, I find that there are really underrepresented communities and marginalized groups that do not often get to, you know, have their say in the news. And often, even if you like, you know, look around, Jeff, I mean, how much of representation do you find within the you know, larger news media market in Canada, and for that matter, even North America? It's changing, it's evolving, it's surely growing, but we're still not there yet. And that's why I think I was very much interested in immigration, because for many people, you know, it's just about seeing or understanding that, you know, everybody is just, all people coming to Canada, all are immigrants. But there are so many nuances to each experience, because a person coming to Canada as a refugee would have such stark differences than a person coming here on a, you know, as an international student. And with the presently with the ongoing, you know, anti-immigration rhetoric, altogether it becomes more important to the wider audience that, hey, there's so many, you know, vast amount of experiences in this particular field that we need to focus on. So I think that was one of the reasons why, you know, I was very much interested in pursuing immigration, because I came to Canada as an international student and I firsthand saw, you know, the challenges, the, you know, the good, the bad and everything, the ebbs and flow of the entire journey. And I understood that, you know, coming from a certain space of privilege, Jeff, that it was easy for me. But I knew that there are, you know, international students out there who are working, you know, 3 to 4 part-time jobs, you know, staying in very difficult living situations, trying their best to pursue education while also trying to, you know, survive in spaces like Vancouver and Toronto. And it is very, very difficult at times to find their voices heard in the larger news markets, especially, you know, in more of the urban centers in Canada. So that was one reason I wanted to pursue immigration as a beat, because more and more we pursue, the better it is. And we have some really great people at CBC also, you know, pursuing immigration, constantly writing about it, both for political and apolitical scenarios. And other journalists also, like Nicholas King at Toronto Star, does amazing journalism around this. So I think things are changing, and I hope it keeps on doing on that level. And climate change, well, I think all of us should be writing about it. All of us should be having conversations around it. It is becoming a part of a reality. It is something undeniably going to be a part of our future. So the more we write about it, the more we talk about it now, and put it on the public record, the better we are prepared for the future. I hope that answers the question. Sorry for the long rant.
No problem at all. That definitely answers the question. And I want to segue into the idea of writing about it and talking about it and spreading that awareness. And I'm actually very curious what sort of a simplified version of a day in the life is like for you as a reporter. Do you have a lot of contact with the people that you interview, or is it mostly in the office where you're given or you're researching information? How is that like for you?
Every day is a new day, Jeff. I'll tell you that. And one thing I love about being a journalist is the opportunity to learn something new every single day. I cannot remember a day where, you know, I did not cover something new, or a day where something not happened that, you know, surely, you know, blew my mind. Oh my God, what's happening? On the day-to-day operational side of it, it's mostly, most journalists, I would say, would have two parts. Either you're, you know, you're pitching your stories, that you are yourself finding things happening in the community and you're pitching that to editors and you want to pursue that, or you're being assigned a story that something is happening and, you know, some event is happening, something breaking is happening, and you get assigned to that story. I often, you know, jump on both the sides of the, you know, path, and it just begins by establishing yourself with the community. My role specifically is, you know, reporter assigned to community engagement, and I take that very, very seriously. I want to connect with the community. I want to connect with people whose voices we do not hear often. And the more you, you know, do your journalism in a community, the more you understand the dynamics of it, the better you understand what people are thinking, what people are wanting, what is in the media narrative that is, you know, going amiss. And usually all journalists, you know, most journalists at least, I would say, have, you know, good contacts in the community. Something is happening, they would know who to contact. Any typical day would mean, you know, reaching out to your sources on a given story, interacting with them. I am a multimedia journalist, so most of my conversations either happen in presence of a camera with my sources or, over the phone. And I like to be out and about in the field, so I'm glad I get to do that than staying on my at my desk and filing a story. You go out, you speak with people, you speak with community groups who are, have to respond, you speak with any other organizations and get a holistic picture of what is happening. An important part of, being a journalist is to seek the truth. We never say that we know the truth. We never say we have found the truth. We can always just seek it. And the only best way to seek the truth is by being holistic, by being very inclusive. So if we have spoken with a wide variety of people, who are perhaps seeing something similar or even different, that brings us closer to the truth. And that is, I think, any given day for me personally, if I'm pitching a story, I go out for a day or two, gather it, bring it back, read the narrative and, publish it on our TV and web and radio and socials. And if I'm being pitched a story, pretty much the same thing. It just depends on the kind of stories you're pursuing. It could be a breaking file versus a feature. And both of them, have their own different depths. The breaking file, you would want to immediately get that information out because, the public deserves to know. The public should immediately know that something is happening. With a feature or investigative piece, it's more time-consuming. It's more, lengthier process. You spend days, weeks, sometimes months finding the sources, building your a rapport with them, and eventually publishing something for the public interest.
I can't imagine how much or how many articles and how much information you learn in a daily basis. And I'm sure that, I'm a strong believer that, in most cases there are two sides to a story. And I'm sure you when you read articles and when you read news, there's always these two sides. And as a journalist, I'm sure you have to look at it, like you said, in a holistic way, almost in an unbiased way as well. But at the same time, for me personally, when I read articles and news, I tend to almost sympathize and relate to both sides sometimes. How do you, as a journalist, kind of figure out not to fix this issue, but how do you deal with this when it happens, when you can't really decide which side is right or what you lean more towards? How is that like for you?
Right, Jeff. That is the beauty of our job, right? Because there would be at times such conflicting views you're hearing from two sides, from two different parties saying, one party saying, no, this is happening, and the party saying, no, it's just their belief. And I think that's where the role of a public broadcaster comes in. We always strive, for that balance, that sense of fairness in our stories. And we publish both the sides because it's all about documenting. It's all about part of keeping up with the history. We are, all of us, you and I, all of us are in this right now, in this moment, creating, histories. We all are trying to capture what's happening. And the more variety of, views we capture, the better it is for the audiences. And we present what's happening in the community and we let the audience, make that call, what they want to believe. We can tell them that, yes, there's a budget cut coming. We can tell them that, yes, a tornado is coming. We can tell them that, yes, a protest is going to happen out tomorrow in the town square. Anything like that. And we can present them, what both sides of the situation, and they can best interpret, what they want to. I'm sure you also, as a reader, you have that empathy, when you read the stories, you empathize with both the sides. And I think that's a very good thing on you as a reader, as a person of the audience, because you're able to empathize with the piece, with the event happening. And I think that in itself is a victory of journalism, that if we are able to, contribute to the public discourse, providing a variety of diverse views. And that's so important, Jeff, diversity of views.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think to really truly understand something, you definitely have to dive into that diversity of perspectives and opinions to kind of gather a more accurate point of view. And I want to stick on this topic of the focus of what you're reporting. And I'm sure that you do report a lot of things, in a lot of topics. But was there ever an instance where you weren't particularly interested in a topic, but while you were researching and reporting a certain topic, that kind of trickled down to, you know, other things that you just didn't know were there?
Oh, no, for sure. For me, anything sports is a bit of a curveball. I just, you know, have no idea about what's happening in the sports world. And at times, you know, we are assigned to those stories or something is happening and you go, you know, and you cover it and it becomes such a nice little experience. I think on that tangent, it's a thinker. I'll tell you that, Jeff. I think I'll go with the sports because that did happen last year. I was assigned to a story to cover a local, you know, a local soccer team and, you know, what they were playing. And I got to go there, you know, meet with the kids and, you know, interact with the family members and, you know, speak with the people out there about the experiences. And in that, you know, journey itself, in that moment itself, you know, I came across another parent, you know, starting a group for immunocompromised children in Saskatoon. And, you know, that was a great, you know, way of networking because in that experience of covering a sports event, you know, which is for all kids, you come across a need in the community. And that was such a, like, you know, almost a great moment for me because it was like, initially I was reluctant to cover that story because I knew nothing about soccer. And I was like, oh, I don't even know the terminology in sports. How would I go cover and how would I interact with these kids who are so passionate about this sport, this particular sport? But, you know, in that process of just understanding, you know, I came across another story. And that was very, very teachable moment for me that, you know, never, ever shy away from any story because you never know. You're always supposed to get to learn something. Even if you do, make, you know, end up making a fool of yourself. But still, you'll do learn something new in that process, and that's what happened in this particular case.
Yeah, there's a lot of mediums that you can choose to do journalism in, and in your case, right. You said you do a lot of your work in front of a camera. Was there a reason why you kind of chose this medium, or do you have any mediums that you prefer to work with, and do you have a reason for that?
Well, I mean, one thing is that, you know, most of us at CBC, most of the reporters at CBC, we do file multiple platforms because our audiences are at, you know, multiple platforms. So people who are of different ages listening to the radio, a different set of audience, you know, on the web, and a very increasing and diverse audience, you know, on our social and TV and such platforms. For me personally, there was never a sense of choice of a platform. It was more towards the story, to the content itself. And if you have a good story, if you know how to tell a story, a platform or a medium would never, ever pose a problem to you. That's just my experience. I cannot, you know, ever say that should be the experience of everybody. But personally, I like to tell stories visually because instead of me presenting, you know, an 800-word article to you, and if I present to you a 2-minute or a minute long TikTok about that, you'll surely be more inclined to the TikTok, won't you, Jeff? Tell me.
Yes, I think so. 2 to 3 minutes? Yeah, right? Maybe.
Right? So you would just want to consume that information real quick. And that's how, like, even as you're aware, like, you know, traditionally we used to structure our, you know, in print and in other places where we used to deal with written word, we used to always emphasize on the lead because the lead should just communicate that. And now we know that the audience, you know, has very, very different needs. Not many people would actually go to a website and read a story, and that's for all news publications out there. Most people out there right now are on their phones. And where are they consuming the news? It's on, you know, social media. So I think visual storytelling, I think, is increasingly a need for most, you know, media houses out there. And I think that's why I also like it, because you get to engage with the audience and you get to tell them, you know, the great important things they need to know about a story. And if they want to learn more, they can surely, you know, always head to the website and read the full 800-word article about it. So that has always been, you know, the preference for me. Radio also, I mean, I never did radio when I was in India. In India, I used to do print and television journalism. But radio was something very interesting when I came to Canada. I got to dabble in it. And it's really a very interesting way to connect with the audience, because just little sounds up, just with a little with the flow, you can, you know, weave such a beautiful story to the audience, which is, you know, they can just visualize it. So, yeah, both visual storytelling and the radio have been interesting pathways for me personally.
Yeah, I can imagine the changes that went through the years, especially in, you know, media platforms like social media, as we're more and more involved with that platform. And there's definitely some platforms that are not being used as much. But do you have any particular things that you've noticed through the years of this involvement in social media and these certain media platforms that are being focused towards? And has that ever maybe affected your work at all, or your viewpoint in how information is being going around in the world?
Right. I mean, when you say the world, I mean, it's very, very, very specific culturally and geographically. I'll tell you that, Jeff, because I'll contrast it with India and Canada, for example, because these are two places I have lived experiences in. I think I can only speak to these two particular, you know, spaces. In India, still, television is a very, very central form of news consumption for most audiences. People, most households still have a TV, and they still switch on to, you know, TV news, and they watch it through the day. That still is a news habit of multitudes, and in India, millions of people out there. Out here, let me ask you, like, do you watch television news regularly, Jeff?
I do not. I usually consume news through either articles on my phone, or, like you said, maybe in social media, which is sometimes not the most reliable source, I guess.
Well, unless it's coming from a, you know, news organization.
Oh, yes, right? For sure.
But right? Like, that's what you, like, you know, that's the reality. In Canada, we have very few people right now, I would say, at least of our generation. I'm 20, 25 right now. How old are you, Jeff?
I am 20.
You're 20, right? So that's the thing. Like, you know, most of us, you know, of our generation, we consume the news on our phones. We consume the news over social media. We consume the news, you know, in these new modern forms than, say, traditional forms like television. So while, you know, television news per se itself is not that strong a platform in Canada, in places like, you know, in India and China, I do know, it is a very, very, still a very strong form of news consumption. An evolving habit for sure is social media. And with that comes a change in the content itself. Because now you cannot write, you know, I mean, you can still, and we still do, you can still write long form features, but you need to be very, very, very judicious and careful with your words and with your length, because brevity is indeed the spice of life. People do not have that attention span. We all know, if on Instagram you're scrolling, if a reel per se is not appealing to us in the first 3-4 seconds, we skip. So the news has to immediately jump out to you in the first 5-10 seconds of a reel, in the first line of a news article or the headline for you to even, you know, click on that news article. And within the first like 10 seconds of a television news, if you do own a TV, that is. So, and that has been a change, and we need to, and that's for all news media organizations, we need to meet our audience where they are. And most of the, you know, upcoming, the audience for a future, they are on social media. So I think that's a pivot across the globe, I think, for most news agencies, that they have been covering and putting out more of the content, more of the news on their social media. And of course, their websites, because that's where people go and take their news of the day. And podcasts, right? Like, and that has been a growing, growing market in Canada as well. They have such a great podcast out there. The Decibel from the Globe and Mail, and at CBC also, The Burner, we have, and you know, we have a colleague in India doing Modi's India. Such great podcasts out there for people to grasp that depth and that, you know, dynamics of news through these visual and auditory forms than say reading, you know, long news features. I hope that answered that question.
No, it definitely did. And I actually want to touch upon something you said about how careful you need to be with the words you choose to use. And I think that applies to your verbal words as well. And there's probably a lot of pressure on you as well as a journalist when you're writing an article and you're speaking in front of a camera, and you have to be cautious with to the letter of what you're saying, because it can alter the meaning and the way that people might perceive or feel about, you know, what you've said or written. How do you deal with this sort of pressure, and how do you kind of help yourself to not make a mistake or almost, you know, go through the process without having that pressure affect your work?
Right. There was a French linguist called Saussure, and he said that language is power. Language is a form of meaning making. So, and that still stands to today, because what we say and how we say has such grave importance to the audience out there. And we as journalists, we as, you know, news media houses, we need to be very reflexive about it. And I'm glad that, you know, that increasingly there is more and more conversation around this. There is that pressure, no doubt, about communicating the story in the right, accurate words. And more than, you know, being politically correct, it is about accuracy here, Jeff, that you need to know that what the facts are. If suppose there has been a, you know, a crash. Okay, I went to UBC Health in UBC at Red Beach, you're hearing that, you know, somebody, you know, crashed into somebody, and you know, there are reports, people are tweeting about it. We cannot just go ahead and run that story until we have verified it. And once you verified it, you would need to know how that crash happened, whether it was deliberate, whether it was just accidental, what was it? And then you get into the nuances of telling that story to the audience. It's so important for us to be very careful with the language we choose, because we can shape what the audience is then thinking. We do not in any way want to tell them that something, you know, is off when it is actually not. There is that sense of, you know, that panic in the audience, and we do not, you know, need to add on to it. And a very, you know, prime example to it would be what we saw during the, you know, the COVID pandemic. The amount of, you know, stigma and racism, which was, you know, initially in so many news networks were doing, especially in America, about, you know, calling it the Chinese virus. It was so racist, it was so stigmatizing. And in countries, you know, it actually, you know, fueled anti-Asian racism, you know, in many instances. So language becomes so important that we need to call it a COVID-19 pandemic instead of calling it like Wuhan, virus, because it shapes what people are thinking. It shapes their actions. And it especially becomes a challenge when you're talking about, you know, the pressure. It becomes a challenge when you're covering breaking stories, because that's when things are still evolving. And you need to be very cautious with what you're putting out there. You need to be cautious with how you're phrasing the story, how you are, what kind of language are you describing? Because language also comes with an intent. And we do not want our words to have connotations where they actually do not. And many times it has happened in past, people, you know, would have covered the story or would have hit that, you know, publish button in haste. And we would have had, you know, like when I say we mean like in the larger journalist better and across the world, you know, they would have had, you know, come to terms, oh, wait, we published it too soon. So language, I think, increasingly is a conversation in many news houses about how to approach things carefully. It might be, you know, how we refer to, you know, immigrants, how we refer to LGBTQ+ people, how do we refer to people who are unhoused, how do we refer to people you know, who are experiencing addictions? How do you refer to people who are, you know, going through different, you know, levels of recovery? It's so important because, as I said, language can be stigmatizing and we do not want to add to that stigma. So all of us across the globe, from UK till New Zealand till Canada, all of us, all journalists out there, because I see, you know, many news houses putting out those articles, they're constantly working on their language guides. And that is a very important tool for journalists across the globe. Every major news outlets out there have a language guide. They have A to Z understanding of what words to use, what kind of language to avoid, what is the derogatory form of using, you know, a word, and how to approach issues. And more than, you know, this amazing need and amazing resource, you know, all of us have, at most, at least most news organizations have as a language guide, it's also about going back to your source, consulting with them. How do they want to be, you know, understood and associated? An example of that would be, say, you're covering a pride walk, you know, and you're out there, you're seeking people, they have come out, they're showing the solidarity, they're, you know, they are, you know, talking about the importance of their pride walks. One person might, you know, be okay being referred to as, you know, queer. Other person might not find that term as relatable. They might want to be referred to be as members of 2SLGBTQ+, or they might want to be referred to specifically as, you know, gay or bisexual or whatever. It's important that we give our sources that volition, that they have that agency, that they can determine, that they have that space for determining how they want to be addressed as. And it's increasingly a great habit I'm seeing, at least, you know, within our organization, I also in other places also. People are very, very, very reflexive. People are very careful and people understand that experiences are very different, very diverse, and we need to always consult. So I think that's how, you know, you can be careful yet accurate with the language consultation.
Yeah, I think it's honestly really fascinating to hear that, you know, journalism might be seen as a way to just talk about and you know, send information, you know, throughout a country or throughout the world. But it actually takes a lot of consideration to who you're sending this information to and almost anticipating who's going to be listening to and consuming the information, and have to take into that in account to, you know, the way you express that and study, you know, what certain words or phrases can change or alter someone's perception. So yeah, I think that's the beauty and the fun part mm-hmm. about journalism is not only studying new news, but also the people and, you know, the way that they interact with information.
Right.
But I want to move on to more of a less serious topic, I guess you can say. But was there anything or any story that you can tell us that was maybe one of the most or a rewarding feeling that you got during your career so far?
You're throwing some really difficult questions at me, Jeff. Let me give a thought to it. There have been a couple of stories. It felt very rewarding to cover. Since I was immigration as a beat a lot, I, you know, happened to interview people who are, you know, outside Canada, waiting to come to Canada, many people who are in very, very precarious situations. And I happened to, you know, had interviewed a queer refugee in the Middle East, and they were waiting to come to Canada for like 4 to 5 years. And there was, and their safety every day was in peril, because the day anybody found out about them, they would have had, you know, immediately been under attack, under threat. And there were people, there were local police officers out there who knew about this person, and they were taking advantage of them, both, you know, financially and sexually, because they knew that, you know, where would this person go and ask for help while they await the decision to come to Canada. I happened to interview them. We published a story about them, about how they're waiting in an endless, you know, loop. And luckily, I don't know what happened. I'm not saying it was a journalism. I'm not saying any of that. But luckily, they happened to, you know, arrive within 3 months of the publication. And I met them. And they were so, so happy. They were in tears. They were, you know, so emotional. And when you see that, that, you know, whatever you write actually has that power to strike some form of change, it becomes very, very, very real about the, you know, the strength of all of our, all of us, you know, as journalists, we have, we can literally, literally strike change. Another, I think, story which was for me very personally was very rewarding was about international students and how they were asking for, you know, an extension of the 20-hour work permit, because most international students initially could only work 20 hours off campus while they were studying. And that wasn't enough for many students, especially if you're in places like Vancouver and Toronto. And many people, you know, students don't find jobs at universities. So I happened to cover the story, you know, speaking to international students across Canada about their, you know, their trials and tribulations of, you know, managing their finances and studies. And luckily, the government, IRCC, which is the Federal Immigration Department, very soon extended that work hour period for them. And there was a sense of relief for many, many students because now they could have, you know, studied and at least, you know, afford to get food, literally get food for themselves twice a day. So, you know, stories like these help you connect with that, you know, human emotions of people. And it just makes you realize that it doesn't matter where we all come from. At last, we all just want very similar basic things. We want safety, we want shelter, we want food, we want our basic rights to be met. And that was very, very rewarding personally for me. There have been some sad stories I covered. I won't go into their details, but, you know, where somebody lost somebody and news media outlets would... were covering the story in very speculative ways, and I happened to speak with the, you know, the family being impacted, and they, you know, were so thankful that we just listened, we gave them their space, and we just listened to their side of the story instead of going out on ourselves without consulting them, just publishing something. And that, and on that regard, I'm so grateful that I work for the public broadcaster at CBC News, because we take all our stories with such care, with such care that we give the time. We are not in the rush to publish the, you know, hit the publish button, but we verify and we give the space to our audience that they can feel reflected, they can feel represented. And it's very rewarding, Jeff, you know, when you feel heard. It doesn't take much, but if a person feels heard, I think our job as journalists are you know, are met there.
Yeah, for sure. I think giving that attention of, you know, hearing someone's story is, would help a lot, especially for people who need the story to come out and, you know, want to express it in a way. Do you have anything that was possibly unexpected for you, whether it was surprising or, you know, just anything at all that was unexpected in regards to the career that you chose? And do you possibly want to tell what that was, and maybe people who are aspiring to be a reporter like you and a journalist might have this heads up information?
Well, I mean, there are two things, I guess. One would be the unpredictability of our jobs. Any moment, anything can happen, and you have to be there covering it. I think an example of it would be, I remember it was a Sunday morning. I had just made my morning tea and I was just about, you know, relax and start my day. And my managing editor calls me and tells me, we're hearing about, you know, some police reports in the northern Saskatchewan and we need to come for you to come in and work. And I immediately logged in, and that very afternoon, you know, we all learned the grave news, the grave news of the massive, you know, amount of loss in the northern community of Jamesville Cree Nation, where people were killed, mass stabbing had happened, and many people had lost their lives. In moments like that, you do not know what's coming your way, and you just don't know what it would take. At times, it can take long days. At times, it can just, you know, take spending hours just reaching out to people for some amount of information, some, you know, verified information for you to publish that story, for you to tell the audience, hey, this is what's happening in our community. That's one thing I think, you know, any aspiring journalist out there should know. It's both a very challenging a thing, but again, a very, you know, beautiful thing about our jobs, that everything is different. Every day is, you know, different for that very reason, because anything can happen anytime, and you have to be prepared to, you know, face it, deal with it, and approach it with utmost care and empathy. That, I think, one part of the job, I think, which, you know, any aspiring journalist should know, that it's literally news. It can break any time, and you have to be prepared, hands down. Second thing I think about it, about the job, would be the amount of, how should I phrase it? The amount of responsibility you carry on yourself. Because whatever you might be writing today, you know, however trivial it might seem to you as a reporter, as a journalist, carries amazing amount of significance, Jeff, going into the future. Because whatever you are writing today, you are in a way capturing the history of today, and you're informing the masses about it tomorrow. So there's that responsibility, and I take it utmost, you know, utmost pride in that as a journalist, because it's my obligation, it's my duty to cover every story with factual accuracy. I cannot, you know, become lazy. I cannot just speak to two people and publish the story. I need to know exactly, to utmost depth I can, you know, possibly know what is happening in the community, what is happening around a particular news file. And that responsibility is something, you know, which young journalists who are aspiring, or people who are young, you know, people out there who are aspiring to become journalists should not shy away from. It may seem very daunting that you have this task to capture everything accurately, but trust me, it's rewarding when you've got the story correct. It might take a lot of legwork. It might take long hours, but at last, it's worth it, because you are informing masses out there about what's happening. And they would not get to the community and find the answer for themselves. You have to. And in this post-truth era, you know, we are in, where facts don't matter, just the emotional appeal matters. Altogether, our jobs as journalists become vital, because we need to cut through all that misinformation, disinformation, non-information, all that noise which is out there on social media, especially. We all know how it's fueling so many problems out there. We need to cut through all that thick noise and tell our audience, hey, listen, this is actually what might be happening. This is what, you know, you should be paying attention to. That's a responsibility which, you know, personally also, you know, every single day, you know, gives me that, you know, enthusiasm and zeal to get up and go do my job. And that should be something, you know, aspiring journalists out there should know too. People at UBC who write about the UBC, they, you know, they themselves also know this. Such an amazing, amazing publication at UBC it is. And at our schools, we used to run Thunderbird, and, you know, many of our master journalism, you know, cohorts, they have been such great stories about so many different things happening around in Vancouver, in Metro Vancouver. And trust me, the more you write it, the more that responsibility starts to become as a emblem of pride than a daunting task. So I think these two things, the unpredictability and the grave responsibility on your shoulders, are two things I think people should be mindful of.
Yeah, for sure. This last question is more of a, I'm personally curious about this, but I see you, you know, whether it's on the news or on the internet, you reporting in front of the camera, and I can't lie, you have a great fashion sense. Do you get to choose the clothes you wear, or is there some sort of code that you have to go by? How does that, you know, your clothing choice work for you in your work field?
Well, I never thought you'd end the interview with that kind of a question, Jeff. Thank you, I guess. Well, I mean, all journalists, I think they have the prerogative, they have that right to choose what they want to wear. Of course, it has to be in tandem with the, first of all, with the weather, I would say, and secondly, with the story. I choose whatever I want to wear, but I'm very cautious that what kind of story am I covering and where. So if I'm out and about, you know, at some farm in Saskatchewan, talking about carbon tax, talking about, you know, the crop growth that year, I'll be more dressed in a way which is relatable. I will not go out there in a suit and tie. Hey, I'm a journalist. I'm coming to a community. I'll talk about this. No, I will not do that. Because one very important thing that beyond, you know, your speech or approachability, it's also your clothes that you need to be approachable, that, you know, you need to be dressed in a way that the person out there can feel comfortable approaching you and can feel that, yeah, he's like, you know, one of us out there just trying to get some information, not some hot shot, you know, arriving from a van just out there to cover a story. That top-down approach, you know, is going away. And I'm so glad that, you know, all most journalists understand this, that, you know, we need to be approachable. And clothing and fashion becomes a part of it, that you need to be dressed accordingly. I cover news in Saskatchewan, where in winters we get up to minus 40 with the wind chill minus 50. So most of the times you'll see me, Jeff, in a parka and some sweaters. And that's my, I think, my fashion sense. So I think it's geography and sentiment of the story which describe what you should wear. But hey, don't let me stop from, you know, from you wearing whatever you want to wear.
Amazing. Thank you. Those are actually all the questions I have for you. But what I do at the end of all my interviews is I do a Would You Rather segment. And it's almost like a reverse icebreaker where I just ask you some Would You Rather questions. In this case, I've created myself and kind of end off with an easy and fun way. So I'm just going to ask you a couple questions, Would You Rathers, and I just need you to give me an answer within 1 or 2 seconds. Cool?
Oh, boy. That's okay.
All right.
I'm scared. I'll tell you that, Jeff.
No, no worries.
By the way.
All right. Here's the first one. Would you rather skydive while eating a durian fruit or bungee jump solving a riddle? The catch is you have to complete the task of eating the durian fruit when you're skydiving or solving the riddle. If you don't, you have to do it again.
I will do the skydiving because I know anyway I'm going to end up puking, so might as well eat something before I puke.
All right. Would you rather have the ability to not feel cold ever again or hot ever again?
I come from India and I can sustain 45 degrees Celsius. It's the minus 40, which gives me the curveball. So I think it'll be the cold.
All right. Would you rather never have the craving for tea or any type of pastry dessert?
Oh, that's a tough one. Love my tea, love my chai, love my pastries. Oh, I feel pastries.
Pastries, okay.
I'll go with that, yeah.
Would you rather have a magic carpet that only works for you or have the ability to turn into any bird species you'd like?
I'll turn into any bird species I'd like, and I'll so want to save the owls out there.
All right. Would you rather have the knowledge of every food recipe in the world or be able to sing every song there is?
I'm a big time foodie, so I'll go with the food. I just can't sing. So what's the point of learning more songs?
All right. Would you rather be able to fix a sink or the toilet?
Sink. Always the sink.
And last one for you. Would you rather be able to learn how to play any instrument within 40 hours or never need food again?
Has to be the instrument. I'd love to learn how to play some instrument.
All right, that is all I have for you today. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you had some fun. And do you have any last remarks?
Well, just one last message to out there who are listening and to any other person who is interested, you know, in the field of journalism remotely, please please, please consider becoming a journalist. Altogether, we need more of you out here. We need more of you in communities. And local journalism is the way ahead. So please become a journalist, become a part of the community, and it's a very rewarding profession. So please, please do consider and reach out if ever there's any questions you have. And thank you so much, Jeff, for this interview. It was fun.
No problem at all. Thank you again, and I hope you have a lovely rest of the week.
You too, Jeff. Have a wonderful week ahead.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. That was an interview with a reporter. He does work in multiple topics such as, you know, climate change and immigration. And please check him out. His name is Pratyush Dayal. I was able to contact him, I think, through his email, which is available if you just Google his name, I think. And I actually DM'd him as well. So I know I just want to say again, thank you for listening, audience members, and thank you for Pratyush for joining me within this interview. And it was simply a great interview, and I think you know, I definitely benefited from it, and I hope you all did as well. And this is it for my episode today. I hope you guys had a great time listening. I definitely had a lot of fun. And again, my show is a platform for anybody who is willing to share anything about topics such as movies, literature, poetry, stories, or, you know, interviews like this where you can share what you do and, you know, talk about the truth about what your profession has and what it's like to be in it. Once again, my name is Jeff. This was another episode of Lean In with Jeff. Thank you all for listening, and I hope to see you all next week. Bye-bye, everyone. Stay safe, and please go out and enjoy the weather.